Hello and welcome to this special bonus episode of Valhalla Conversations podcast. Tonight we are talking to a very special photographer of sorts. She is a photographer, dear ladies and gentlemen, because I came across her photography in a Nordic mythology and folklore Facebook group, and she has photographed the Norse gods. Quite a claim to fame, I'm sure you'll agree. And it is with some clever editing. There's great historical costumes, great staging, great lighting. The scene setting is wonderful. And she's captured scenes from the tales of the Norse gods as well. There is a photo of Odin. There is a photo of Freya. There's a photo of Loki looking extremely mysterious as he eyes at Balder, who's about to have every weapon of mankind thrown at him. There is an epic photo of Valkyries on a battlefield, which I know this photographer is also involved. There's a photo of Idun with her golden apples and a photo of Thor being bested by the old lady in Utgard Loki's hall. But that's enough of the photos. We are here to talk to the photographer behind them and how she came up with them. And I would like to welcome Jen Robinson. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Now, as I was saying, I came across your photos in this Facebook group to do with Norse folklore and mythology, because that is one of my many passions. And as I tried to find out who did these photos, where these photos emerged from, I then discovered that it's with, well, part because you are a member of Regia Anglorum, are you not?
Yes. So I've been a member of Regia Anglorum for, I think this will be my 10th year officially. So we're coming up on a decade. Battle of Hastings will be my 10th year anniversary. And it's kind of interesting that photography really brought me to reenactment in the first place. I had come to the UK on an exchange program. I was doing a degree in ancient and medieval history. So there's a lot of crossing lines here. So I'm originally Canadian. I came from Calgary. And because there weren't a lot of medieval courses for me to take there, I came to the University of Kent, and at the Freshers' Fair, there was someone there in medieval kit, and I'm just like, I want to come talk to you. So they handed me a brochure, it was the end of their day, so they gave me a stack of brochures. I messaged the page, and I'm like, I see you have a show at the Battle of Hastings coming up. Can I come along and just take pictures? That was my plan. I was going to come along. I'm like, this sounds like a medieval festival. I'll just come with my camera and enjoy it. And by the second day, I was on the battlefield as a water carrier, not fighting yet. But I was in kit and carrying water behind the Norman troops. So it didn't take long to go straight from photography to reenactment.
Wow. That's amazing. So tell me, did you always have an interest in medieval history, seeing you chose to come over all the way over here to study it, I assume?
Yeah, I think my fascination with the history kind of started more with fantasy, I think, because there's so much, like, fantasy is so heavily based in medieval lore and medieval kind of just understandings. And a lot of that was Tolkien, who obviously that's a little bit full circle, because he starts with the history, then makes it into fantasy, and then that drew me back. So a lot of the books that I read in kind of high school were very fantasy based, so medieval kind of world building. And then that turned into a very historical base that I wanted to pursue through university.
Brilliant. And was it a particular part of course, because I say medieval, that's quite a huge span of time in itself. Was there a particular era involving the Vikings, so to speak, that interested you, or were you just interested in the Anglo-Saxons, as you say, the Normans, of course, because they're very popular in Hastings?
I think I have anything medieval will suffice. Like, I'll go early, high, late. I think my original thing, just again, through the fantasy, was normally very high medieval. But then when I came to Canterbury to do my studies and I found the reenactment group, I was kind of, I knew of reenactment and I was kind of looking for a later period society, but I ran into Regia first. And I think kind of through that gained much more of an appreciation for the earlier medieval time period.
Cool. So what was it like then once you kind of like after that Hastings event where you got your official first bite, taste of reenactment life? what was the process then of next becoming a member of Reg Anglorum? Because I personally have no idea what the process is like.
you sign a form and you pay a membership. It's not complicated. So it is very easy. It's a very diverse society that we have people from all age groups, all walks of life. There's like families. So there's lots of kids. And I think I'm now starting to become the generation like where they're having their own kids and then they're kind of unwillingly or willingly a part of Reggie as well. So it is just this kind of ever growing community of just people who are nerds about history.
Mm-hmm. And of course they are the biggest, as far as I know, at least reenactment group for history in the UK. And we both have an acquaintance in Reg Anglorum of Nigel Amos.
Yeah.
Because I've seen his wonderful work at the Orbit Viking Festival many times.
Yeah.
Especially, I will always remember his speech during one particular medieval banquet that I did at the festival. And it was the only banquet I ever managed to get to, and he made it a cherry on the cake. Although having Einar Selvik then play a harp and blow a goat horn and play sing music was also a cherry on the top. But yeah, having Nigel there was equally really, really good.
Yeah, York's always a great time.
And he's got such a talent beyond Reg Anglorum in kind of like writing the script for a lot of the festival finales for Jorvik as well. But I know he also does other things to do with jousting and night contests and commentary on that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I always find it fascinating how deep and how extensive people in reenactment groups pursue their history and their expertise and the knowledge beyond, of course, the authenticity of the kit and like the living history aspect.
Yeah.
It's nice to see you all be so active beyond that particular event and that sphere where the public can engage with you.
Yeah, I've always said it's one of the most diverse hobbies you can have because it's a million hobbies within one. If you want to view it as a sport, there's the combat. If you want to do it as a craft, there's a million different crafts. There's sometimes more of an acty side of it. If you're getting involved in some of the scenes and like the orc stuff. So, and I've kind of added photography as a way to like, photography was a separate hobby, but it's meshed really well with, turns out I want to take pictures of Vikings. So it works really well. Weddings wasn't quite for me. I needed people in armor.
No, that's good. That's quite a unique and special talent to have because, of course, we often see photographers working around mock battles as opposed they are kind of like, I've never been, of course, to the Hastings one. I'm alas too far north, being up in North Yorkshire.
Yeah.
I need to do one in Fulford, basically. Then I can get to that one because that's nearer.
I think once William got that far north, there wasn't much of a battle yet. So I don't think you'll have a Hastings.
That's true. But yes, kind of like you see professional photographers doing it, but I think having someone from within society also have that skill to take the photographs probably captures something more. Certainly with these photographs that you've done with your Norse gods staging, how did that idea first come about?
Well, because I've been in the society for a while and I've taken a lot of typical pictures, the ones that you'd kind of expect to get. So I've got the battles, we've got nice portraits of people in their kit and around the campfires and everything else. And I was kind of trying to figure out a way to make, like, I have this wealth of people with amazing kit and this wealth of history knowledge and this like, all of this at my fingertips. And I wanted to figure out how I could basically make reenactment photos that no one else was making. And I was really trying to push more of like narrative photos because we'll often take pictures of like, oh, this was me doing this reenactment or this was like this, us doing this battle. But I wanted photos that had more of a story in them. So my first series that I had done, was looking at a bunch of Anglo-Saxon saints. So I kind of picked saints with clearly identifiable kind of, they're associated with a symbol. So I had like Hildegard von Bingen with her harp, and I had Margaret of Scotland with the book. I had Augustine with like a little model church, just to kind of be like, here's people in this time and here's a bit of a story about them. So I'm using the photos as an entry point to give a little bit more detail about the saint itself. And I figured, okay, well, I did that for the Saxons, now we're going to do something for the Vikings. And I figured, like, the gods are the ones that people would be most interested in, and just visually the most interesting. Because again, you could take a picture of, like, this is this king, this is this king, but just visually there's not much to distinguish them. So I was looking for kind of moments in stories that, if you know the stories, you can look at the picture and make the connection. If you know the mythology, you can look at the picture and kind of figure out who it is without me having to even say.
Mm-hmm. So what made you pick the particular gods and the scenes that you have done then?
Part of it was, like, looking around Regia's faces and, like, who looks like what? So I think my favorite casting still has to be my friend Steve Baker as Odin. Because I think just, he has the beard of Odin, and it was perfect. So I grabbed that. A lot of these, most people didn't know they were going to be in it until about a day or two before, where I'm like, hey, I'm doing this thing. Can I just grab you for, like, maybe half an hour at this event and just go off and take some pictures of you? And they're like, I guess, sure, whatever. So Odin was my first one. He's the one I took the picture of first. So that was just at a training event. He's almost, like, he's photoshopped into that background. So I just took a picture of him quickly outside. The blood is obviously not real, but it, so I had a bandage, and then I had a bunch of fake blood. So I just smeared that over, stuck on his face, accidentally dyed his skin a little bit pinkish for a little bit, which is why there's no fake blood in any of the other ones.
Mark of Odin on that one.
Yeah, a little bit. But yeah, so I took that picture first, and that was kind of my first one. Like, really got excited about the rest of the project. I'm like, okay, who else do I want? And kind of just took it from there.
Cool. So he's obviously in a very simple, I say simple, it looks simple. It's not heavily ordained or lavish, not got great, lots of lavish, colorful embroidery, kind of like dark gray clothing. Got obviously a kind of a hood slash cloak around his face, bloodied, and it is excellently bloodied, I will say. Bandage is across his right, right eye.
Yeah, his right, yeah.
Yes, right eye. I'm having to kind of, like, just know which way direction.
Yeah.
Just, that's always been interesting, kind of, whenever I see depictions of Odin, or even come across him written about in both fantasy fiction or otherwise, kind of like which eye people choose to make the blind one or the one that's not there, whether it's the right or the left.
I did like, before we did, I had a quick Google. I'm like, is there a specific one, or do I get to pick? So I did have a little bit of a Google beforehand. But yeah, like, for that, I wanted it to be, because for these pictures, I was looking for moments. I don't wanted this to be the moment that he's walking away from Yggdrasil. You can see the ravens circling the trees. And just, like, he's just made that decision. He's just gained that knowledge in that story.
And is that a real spear he's holding as well?
That spear is real. He was holding that spear. That is a sharp spear. One of our members had just gotten a shiny new toy. And I had another one lined up because, again, Reggie is great because I can just be like, hi, can whoever has a sharp spear please bring it to this event and let me borrow it for a bit. So, like, I had some options, and then someone came up with this one that was just a gorgeous. I'm like, that one's really pretty. Can I borrow that for like 10 seconds?
I was looking at it before the recording, before recording this episode, and I noticed kind of the gold, kind of almost like a hilt of sorts just below where the actual blade is.
Yeah, so it's almost like a nice little touch. Boar spear that has the...
Yeah. It's a really nice touch, because of course many people forget that he had a weapon, just like Thor had his weapon, and the other many trinkets and toys of the gods. But I do think it's incredibly moody and atmospheric, and it suits Odin's grim side, because he does have quite a dark side to Odin, especially in the actual sagas and the lore. The fact that he gives up an eye for knowledge and hangs himself for knowledge, he's cruel to others as well as himself as well.
Yeah, it's harsh. The Viking world was harsh. You're not going to have a Norse god that's, like, very kind and fluffy bunny rabbits. Like, their world is one of violence and just grimness. So, yeah, it's not going to be easy. But yeah, so I kind of wanted to go with him as the gray wanderer he's known for. So nothing, not in like full King of the Gods regalia. He's like snuck away to do this.
That's a good point, because of course most people, when they think of Odin, they probably think of someone with an even longer beard than that. Or they think of Anthony Hopkins, of course, as Odin from the Thor films, which was an atrocious depiction of Odin. I will never forgive them for inventing the thing that they call the Odin sleep.
Yeah,
he's asleep, just call it a sleep. It's nothing special about it, because he's Odin and he's asleep, really. But anyway, less of that the better. Okay, so which photo came after Odin then? Who was your next star model?
The next one was the Freya one, so the Mead Hall, which I think is the one that I probably did the most actual photoshopping in, because all of those cats are photoshopped in. I was not working with cats live. That was not going to happen.
I did wonder. But I'm assuming the people in that whole scene are real members from Regae as well.
Yep. Again, we are very, very fortunate to have the long haul. We have, it's called Wickhurst. We have our own Anglo-Saxon long haul that's been built by members. We've had it for decades now. And it's a constantly evolving project where people are making stuff, adding stuff, fixing stuff. And any chance we get, we go down there and use it and live in it and have battles around it. And it is one of the most magical places. So we were having, I can't remember which event this is, if I'm honest, because like I said, we go up there a few times. But it was one of those things. I'm like, hi, I need like 20 people in the long haul for a bit. Or and then I'd go around like, you come in. Like just trying to like get more people in. I talked to my Freya beforehand. So that's my friend Laura. So I'm just like, okay, you're a goddess. You're psyching your people up. And she's like, all right, so I'm just like, just yell random stuff at them, post them, just yell stuff at them. So that was an action shot where she's just, I can't remember what she was saying, but she was just like yelling vague noises.
Whether she was half sat on a throne of some sort, or whether she was kind of like half leg up on a table, kind of like getting herself high up.
Yeah. So she has one foot on the throne and one foot on the table.
I did wonder, because of course this is why this scene particularly caught my interest, not because Odin is as everywhere as Loki is, kind of like if anyone can name three gods, it's Odin, Thor and Loki. But Freya herself and this aspect of her awe as having her own hall, and of course hardly anyone remembers or acknowledges that she gets to choose half the dead as well, not just Odin. I was like, yes, this is the Freya that people need to know. She is her own ruler, her own little queen in her own right. And I love the concept that you've got in this scene of her with the hall, and it's beautifully lit, and of course I'm assuming they're real kind of, I want to say paintings, it's not like Bayeux tapestry style behind her.
Wall paintings, yeah, they're on the wall.
Wall paintings, yeah, but that's a lovely aspect of the hall coming through as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was definitely one of the things when I learned that she had a hall too, I'm like, everyone knows the word Valhalla. No one's heard of Folkvang or if I can do anything, I'm going to write that. So I wanted to give her place of command, because I think the female gods don't necessarily do as much in the myths, and or it's like she's going to be offered in marriage to this person or that person and she refuses. And that kind of, it's fine, but like show her in her environment a little bit more. So I wanted to just get that name and get her kind of her setting in a little bit different, just reframe that for her. And then like all the cats. I was going to try and add more, but I ran out of places that made sense to put them.
No, that's good. It's a really amazing photo. And besides kind of like the Valkyries, which is my other secret catnip when it comes to Vikings and anything to do with them, kind of like, yes, I completely salute you for your work with Freya. It's a wonderful nod and homage to her and the legacy that people forget or often overlook, because as you say, they don't, goddesses don't do much in the canon. And sadly, that's probably because of the person who records them all and chose not to record stories about the goddesses as much as he's recorded stories about the gods.
Yeah.
I'm going to blame you, Snorri Sturluson, because I know a lot of other academics do, so I'm just jumping on that bandwagon.
But that was another great one where I just, again, Regia, I'm like, I know a bunch of you have cats. I need some pictures. So just, I got bombarded with just pictures of cats for a while, and I just had to go through. I'm like, okay, I'm like, I gave them all these requirements. Like, has to be full body, has to be like, they have to be like perched on something. Has to be taken either like from below, or I was just trying to get something that would fit. My main plan was having the ones that are in the rafters, and then I got one more that was perfect and just kind of tucked him at her feet. So I was, yeah, for a while there, I my Facebook Messenger was just cat photo, cat photo, cat photo, cat photo, cat photo.
Can I ask, just out of personal interest, what made you choose to have, was it purely because of the editing and the nature of editing them in? Would have been easier to do it with actual live house cats, or did you ever consider making them bigger cats, bigger felines?
I think as soon as something's size is off, the photoshopping has to be maybe better than I would be able to get it.
Okay.
Because I think there's a level of like suspense of disbelief where, yeah, I didn't really consider that I could have made him bigger. I didn't. But I think I still wanted the goddess to be the main focus, and the cats more as like a kind of fun nod and a little bit of an Easter egg. I think if I had had, yeah, might be another future project to just have her with like a cherry, have the big cats. But I think that would be a little bit more.
Yeah,
I would need to watch a few more Photoshop tutorials before I'd be confident to try and attempt that.
I know that's something I personally always think that the cats weren't just your typical house cats. They must have been kind of a large, almost like a lynx or a forest wild cat type size.
Yeah.
Because cats probably were a lot bigger in those days, for all I know. And just simply because if they were pulling a chariot, I think they must be at least pony sized, really. But then it's Norse mythology, and they were probably magical. And
magic,
you know,
cats, they can do what they want.
But I also, part of me thinks, well, it just suits her as a personality to have kind of like, it's like Odin has wolves. Why can't she have like panthers or tigers? Maybe not lions, that's probably a bit too African. But kind of like just those like large cats.
Maybe those are the outdoor cats, and then she has indoor cats too.
Quite possibly. I mean, Thor has goats to pull his chariot. So I can imagine, well, he also eats them. So they're kind of his food come mobile. Mobility, transport. So what's the next photo then? The Balder and Loki with a mistletoe scene then?
Yes, so I tried to do... Yeah, so again, in the hall, that was the same one. There's actually two different photos. So I shot Loki separate to Balder, mainly just because I only have the one speed light.
Well, it doesn't look like it. It looks supposed to be like the one singular scene.
Photoshop success. Yeah, so I really wanted just kind of the skulky lurking in the shadows, the jealousy, kind of the plotting in the forefront, and then my friend Connor in the back just soaking it all in as Balder and trying to make him as like glowing as possible. And then I again put the call out. I'm like, need a bunch of people in the hall for a little bit, bring a weapon. And everyone's like, all right. So a bunch of people came in, you know, with typical weapons, and then a couple people, if you'll notice, like one person's just holding a chair. They were just kind of grabbing whatever was available.
Oh, gosh, yes, I see.
Yeah, so axes, swords, like, I can't remember what other bits and bobs that people brought in, just, like, they picked up just random metal things that were in the fire, so.
Like, yes, someone has what looks like a fire poker.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see it. It's the man in the yellow.
Yeah, so they have a variety of weapons, and then obviously the mistletoe in the forefront.
Well, he looks he does look like he's very much up to mischief there. You can,
yeah.
his expression is spot on, because for those listening on audio, the image is all inside what's the name of the hall again?
Wickhurst.
It's inside Wickhurst. It's in the background, you can see very nicely lit up by daylight, or brilliant photography skill. It's a man with long kind of browny blonde hair, wearing a lovely red cloak, kind of a pale tunic, brown, I want to say boots, probably just like leg straps around shoes.
Yeah, it's kind of like orangey leg wraps around his leather shoes.
That's it. Thank you. I will probably trip over on the terminology of what you guys do, because you go to this depth of commitment. And then around him, you can't really see their faces, but there's loads of men. I don't think I see any women with them.
Yeah, it's all men.
There's definitely a sword, a fire poker. I can see a long-handled axe. Not quite a war axe, but definitely a axe. Mm-hmm. And indeed, someone has got a stool. And they're all, of course, like in the midst of throwing these at Balder. Because, of course, in the legends, Frigg gets everything to swear not to harm Balder. And they decide to set out and throw things at him, and they miraculously bounce off. Or just don't touch him at all, for whatever reason. And, of course, in the legends, Loki finds out through a bit of deceitry and mickery that mistletoe was deemed too little, too young. to be asked to not harm Balder because it was only a sprig. So he takes that sprig and turns it into a dart. And the lighting and the look on this guy, who's the guy playing Loki in this photo?
So his name's Tom.
Tom. Spot on. It's tinged with mischief, trickery, and maybe a hint of cruelty for the impending throbbing of the dart, which does ultimately kill Balder because it's the one thing that's promised not to hurt him. That is brilliantly done. Absolutely brilliantly done.
He was one of the funnest ones to cast, I guess, because again, we were kind of, I'm sitting there, I'm looking around, I'm like, who's Loki? And I was kind of like looking at people's faces and like going through people's Facebook profiles. I'm like, do you work as a Loki? And I was trying to figure out. And then, and it's always like, who's going to be at events too? Because it depends on who's actually there. And then I saw that he was coming. I'm like, yes. Tom can be my Loki. This will work.
He does it really well. And of course, that particular aspect of Loki as well is one that not many people may know of, because that aspect of Loki then triggering the things that lead up to Ragnarok. Of course, people may know of Loki with the Thor and his testicles gag to try and get Skadi to laugh. Oscar,
yeah, I wasn't going to take a picture of that.
And of course, sitting into a horse and getting off with another horse is a whole other.
That was not a photo that I was willing to take.
But that actually made me think, did you ever consider doing maybe a scene from the Lay of Thrym with Loki and Thor dressed up as bridesmaid and bride?
I did for the Thor one. I was kind of going back and forth on what I wanted to do for Thor. So that was Thor in a dress was definitely an option, and maybe a future one, because like that's just good fun. I think it was a toss-up. It could have been either.
Well, you've still done really well with Thor, Loki and Balder there. And of course the next one is one of my top favorites. It is the Valkyrie scene, and I would love for you to describe the scene for our audio listeners.
Again, the call went out, I need a bunch of people to be dead. So all of those bodies are bodies, and they were very, very patient with me as like we arranged the shield, we got all the weapons. The smoke in the picture is in the picture that wasn't added. That was yet another person like, here's a smoke, little smoke grenade. Can you just run around for a bit? So they were being very helpful with that. My lovely husband was the tripod in this case, because he's the one who was actually standing behind the camera and took the picture, because I'm obviously one of the Valkyries.
You are the one right in the middle at the front as well.
Yeah. I guess I'm the one who's taking the pictures. I'm in charge of the pictures. I get to put myself in my favorite one.
Absolutely. You deserve it, so. And you were wearing kind of female garments of the time, kind of the open dress with the large oval brooches, and different colours, different beads going across. And you're all, there's three of you, I should say, dear listeners, there's three of you each holding spears, interestingly, of different heights, which I never actually thought of spears being different heights, but it adds to the drama, I think.
Yeah, well, even in our combat system, we have kind of typically two lengths of spears, single-handed spear or two-handed spear.
Ah.
So they're considered different. You'd fight with them differently. In the actual time, they also would have had like javelins to throw as well. So I'm sure like very few things in warfare would have been absolutely universal. It's not like nowadays where soldiers look identical. Everyone would have had whichever axe they could get, whichever spear they could get. So, again, it was just depending on which sharp spears we had.
Now, I would love to know your thinking behind the way you've positioned you, yourself, and the other ladies that are supporting you in this scene. Because, of course, you're not actively, well, like, you don't look proactively choosing the dead as the choosers of the slain.
True.
Kind of thing, but you do look fearsome and formidable. I will say that. I wouldn't want to come across you guys on a battlefield by the looks of those stairs and those serious glaring faces. But it's certainly, you've portrayed Valkyries not in line at all with the romanticized version that everyone has today of them either having wings or winged horses and, of course, winged helmets.
Yep.
Which is their common, their trait is that almost like their eternal curse is to have winged helmets, like the Vikings have horned helmets, and of course it's all back.
Yeah.
And the Mildoplas, because he was the costume designer, so it's ultimately his fault.
Yeah.
As I found from my humble little research. But I kind of like it when people do try and get back in touch with these ideas, this idea of these were women, but they were women with power and control in their own right, in their own domain, own skill, not just because they were wearing armor and they happened to follow Odin around and do his bidding kind of thing.
Yeah, because again, they're working for both Odin and Freya, because she gets half.
Yes.
And so for them, for that moment, I just kind of almost wanted a little bit of a sense of stillness. When you had these big battles, there would have been like some carnage left over. So I wanted kind of that ruin and that almost just misty fog of like waiting. Like everyone who survived has left. And now it's the Ravens and the Valkyries to take their pick. So
that's a beautiful line, by the way. That deserves to be in a book somewhere.
Yeah. Copy that, write that down. It could have been that they were like picking through, but I didn't want them to look like scavengers, because you know, that could be another funny different photo of like the scavengers of the battlefield just loading up on people's shoes or something. But I wanted them to have like a very, this is a solemn responsibility, this is not everyone's getting picked, so you're only getting kind of the cream of the crop. I think I just wanted there to be a little something more unearthly about them, that they're staring off into the distance. They're being imposing. They're not necessarily like picking anybody up or anything, because that would seem almost too human if like you're just carrying somebody. So I just wanted them to be that little bit ghostly presence. Because according to some of the poems, like they would be there during the battle as well. A lot of the Valkyries' names are very connected to the sounds of battles' cries, and in some poems they're like that they are involved in like the fate of the battle and deciding the battle. So they're not just there at the end, they're kind of there all the way through. So in my mind, it was almost like they've been standing there the whole time. That they were there during the entire fight, kind of overseeing everything. And now at the end it's died away. So the action has happened around them.
That's a beautiful image. I really like where your mind was working. Going with that one, that's because, as you say, that their names like Skogul and Mist, and like now they're just like to do with spear or shields or host better, which is one meaning I've come across. I can't remember what its actual Norse name version was, but they're so, I want to say, onomatopoeic in that kind of sense, and that it's so closely linked to the action, the verbs of what they surround and what they're connected to.
Yeah, very often the sound of battle was their names. It's sheer shield smashing or whatever. It is the noise and the chaos that kind of comes across in their names.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, because of course, that instantly, of course, makes me think back to Brynhild, the infamous fight Valkyrie of them all. Or the famous one, not infamous necessarily, but the one that most people know. If only for not Wagner, maybe from Bugs Bunny doing their weird spin on it.
Yes.
Back in the 1990s.
Where everyone knows the Flight of the Valkyries from.
Yes. And there's so much more. And I was fortunate to have recently seen the latest iteration of that actual opera cycle.
Oh, I would love to see that. That'd be good.
If it comes out on DVD, because it was done by the British Royal Opera, and they did actually stream it live to cinemas around the UK and other countries as well. It was sensational. It's part of their open opera season. So they do another season in the autumn, but this was one of their last operas for the spring. And it was 5 hours and 45 minutes.
But that's a long one.
It flew by. It had 2 half-an-hour breaks. And thankfully, because of us watching in the cinemas, we got to hear from one of the production managers, we got to hear from the director and the conductor as well, and the enthusiasm and passion coming off them all was sensational. Mm-hmm. There's more music than the Flight of the Valkyries to it, and their version, their depiction was a modern day kind of context, so that was like modern day clothing-esque. Mm-hmm. But their Valkyries were beautifully raw, as I say in one little spiel of a rant that I did on my Instagram page afterwards. They were wearing simple blue dresses, almost like overall dungaree blue with dark clobbering boots, but they were covered in soot and mud and grime, and their hair was matted, but they looked absolutely ecstatic about it. They didn't have a care in the world until they realized that Brynhild had made a big mistake.
Yeah, battles are messy. You're not going in there with manicured nails and, you know, perfectly curled hair. It's going to get grimy.
Yes. Because I don't know if you've ever come across Njal's saga and the Battle of Pontaf, with that epic scene of the Valkyries weaving with guts and the spear shuttle and the men's loom weights.
Web woven and wound of entrails and heavy weighted with heads of the slain? Are blood bespattered spears the treadles, iron bound the beams, the battens arrows?
Wow. I salute you now and bow before. That's impressive.
I'm going across it.
Okay, tell me more. How did you come across the saga now? Because I'm curious. How you memorized it and why?
So it was part of my university thesis. So.
Oh, no way.
I did my undergrad honors degree because I did a dual degree. I did English, ancient and medieval history, and English literature.
Ooh.
And what I found was I loved where they intersected. So I was looking a lot at historical literature. And so, as I said, I kind of got into all of this through Tolkien. So my topic was how fate is used in Tolkien's Legendarium and how he bases his first age story, so the Silmarillion, on a more Norse idea of fate, and how there are people who are enacting fate and gods that are enacting fate, and that's a very kind of structured and tangible thing. And then by the time he got to the third age, then it became a more Anglo-Saxon interpretation of fate, where it's weird, it's this force, it's divine, but it's not necessarily attributed directly to a god. It's just that things happen the way they're meant to happen, which is a much more Anglo-Saxon view. So the Njal saga was something that I brought up quite a bit, and hopefully I'm still looking into trying to like get a loom that I can make, obviously not with actual heads, but I would love to do a photo series or video or something that will kind of let me explore that further, because that is a personal favorite of mine. So yeah, I tried to learn it in the Old Norse. I'm still working on that. I don't have anything to do that, but I was starting to learn bits of it in English, just to kind of that picture of people in Regia do weaving. So people will have their looms set up the weights aren't heads. They're just like balls of clay or little almost donuts of clay. And so you see that, but then you think of like, okay, taking this very female domestic job and then making it like the most gory thing that you could possibly imagine, where you're weaving with guts and heads. So I do, that will be a future project at some point, because I think that's just too cool of an image to not do more with.
And it's one that some people really need to learn and wake up to, because as much as they've kind of tried to take the Valkyrie character from the Thor films and the Marvel Universe, she's simply called Valkyrie. We know of no other name for her, I should say. So they have become kind of like this atypical role model for a strong, independent female character, although they are they, not so female. But it's interesting to see kind of like trying how people are trying to get away from like the clean, the beautiful, the winged helmets, the armor. They are trying to almost like refine the roots for where this very unique female being from the pantheon and mythology, and because there's so many of them and yet we know so little. Mm-hmm. Because I did my degree at Huddersfield University and it was English Studies with Creative Writing, and nearly all my creative writing had Norse elements in. It was terrible Norse poetry because I did terrible forced rhyme. And I remember one of the poems was about a Valkyrie at night, kind of like collecting souls. And then one of my first favourite short stories was called The Old Ways Never Die, and it was about a Valkyrie in modern day York collecting souls and doing that kind of thing. So of course I love York, born in York, and I just can't get enough of Vikings, and of course York is the hub of all Vikings to me.
It is.
As much as they had kind of like other great kind of like domains in the other Midlands, for example, because they had a huge swathe called the Danelaw. It's just absolutely fascinating. And I remember, I think it was my 24th birthday, I remember 23rd actually, my husband, a boyfriend at the time, went to York and we found a lovely old photography shop called Old Times Photography. They're sadly no longer there and no longer in business, perhaps for every reason, COVID probably, but they did kind of like green screen and had fancy dress costumes, and I kind of like put on a Galadriel white costume that had like a nice hood holding a very delicately looking pretend sword, and they put an art like a pretend army behind me, and that is the closest I've come to being a Valkyrie. Closest I've come, even though it's very un-Valkyrie like. It's merely the weapon and the army that represent anything Valkyrie.
Well, we were talking about York before, so there's a few times where at the end of the night show, there was one year I got to be one of the Valkyries, that after everyone's fought, we come on and just kind of walk through and like kind of tap people and come with us to kind of create, just as part of that finale of the Valkyries choosing the slain. And that was always just a very atmospheric, it's dark, and we walked up to the York Eye, and then the fireworks went off. I didn't know that's where the fireworks were, so we were in there while they're being set off. I'm like, this is amazing, but this is way louder than I was expecting. So that was a very cool, just like Valkyrie ascending up the hill moment, as like the music's swelling and Nigel's doing his monologuing, and it was very thematic, and then it sounded like we were in a war zone.
Okay, so going slightly off topic from the photos, I'm keen to know, what finales were you in at Jorvik Viking Festival?
I don't know how to differentiate them necessarily, because I'll be honest, we could normally...
Sorry, go on.
I was in the Shield Maiden one, the one that was a couple years ago, when they it was one of the few times where they addressed the kind of myth of Shield Maidens and the fact that they're in stories. So the one that was like women through the Viking Age, I was in that one.
I think I did see that one. I think I did. So it was kind of like staged as kind of like a daughter and her father having this conversation, and then it kept flashing back to different... I saw that one. I was there. I was in the crowd.
So I was in that one.
It was many years ago now, but yeah.
Yeah, like I said, I've been doing this for a decade, so I can't really... And then, yeah, it was obviously COVID called one off, and then one year it was like weather that called it off. So there's... I can't remember, but I've been in a few.
Was the storm, because I remember that was the year that Nigel, who'd written his kind of like dramatization of the Ibn Fadlam kind of like narrative of them eating the roosts and kind of like the angel of death and the burials, and I was really looking forward to it, but I was also in the very, very early stages of pregnancy, so I had horrendous fatigue.
So
to be honest, part of me was a bit relieved when they decided they couldn't do it, because the wind was so strong it was blowing all the lights and the fences over.
Which was, I remember that.
Anyone.
Nobody wants to be doing anything in that. So yeah, I couldn't tell you which ones I've been in, but I'd say a handful of Yorks that we do the night battles for, because during the day is the competitive fight, and then in the evening is the more showy one.
Yeah, because I think kind of like the finale that I got to see this year with Time Will Tell Theatre was that's the most recent one I've been able to get to since early pregnancy and COVID finally hit, because all the other years, the trains out of my part in West Yorkshire have just been like going into a black hole or just never coming out. They don't ever sometimes make it through past Leeds to us in Huddersfield. There's just all sorts of network problems. They're upgrading the network now, so there's even fewer trains. But anyway, but that's awesome to think that I got to see you doing your thing.
I would have been, it was great because we had like torches and stuff. And I think like anytime you're carrying fire, that's just a good feeling.
Oh, okay, so, cool.
Yeah,
oh,
I'm not done photographing Valkyries. I think Valkyries will be, there will be more Valkyrie photos because
you need to be in touch on that one.
Because like they're just a very cool aspect of it. And that kind of cool ghostly, they're just fun characters. So.
Yeah. I mean, the one aspect that's always fascinated me about them is how much agency do they have? How closely are they bound to Odin? Or do they kind of decide, do they judge the people that are dead on the battlefield? Or does Odin give them like a list? And, like, how much direction do they see? Because I don't know if you've ever come across Kate Hartfield's book titled The Valkyrie. Put it on your reading list. You will love it. It's a really cool retelling of the Volsung story from Brynhild's point of view and Princess Gudrun's point of view. And the world building she's done with Valkyries and explores how they become to be and how they do what they do. And of course, she also explores and acknowledges their almost counterpart, which is the Disir spirit maidens, which kind of like are mentioned in sources, but they're even vaguer than the Valkyries. They haven't got much purpose, but we know that everyone has a Disir and they can effectively be good ones or bad ones. But in her her little novel universe, the Disir spirit maidens work for Freya. So the Valkyries are almost having to kind of like
fight over the scraps
of the dead, the Disir. Because of course Odin doesn't like Freya because Freya knows Sina magic and she's not willing to give up the secrets, and there's a bit of a feud going on there. But I won't say any more because I do want you to read it, and I'd love you to tell me what you think of it as soon as you hit the last page, because I absolutely loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I was thrilled to get her on the podcast later last year to talk about her amazing book. But yes, sorry, dear viewers and listeners, we will digress back to the photos. As everyone that should know, if they've got this far in my podcast, Valkyries will just keep me going for a very long time. So from Valkyries, we then move to another goddess that many people not be aware of or think of much, which of course is Idun and her golden apples. So I'd love to tell you, if you tell us more about how you came up with this particular photo and aesthetic.
Again, I was trying to look for characters that have a clear visual connection. So like Loki with the mistletoe, Odin with the spear, Idun, like just need the golden apples. So again, that was actually shot at, I believe, Lincoln Castle. Which is the stone wall in the back. And we just kind of went back up into, we had a show there. And I talked to the girl in the photo before. So I'm just like, can we just grab the pictures? I, you know, just Amazon some apples, spray painted them gold, put them in a bowl. So this was probably I won't say easiest, but this was like the one that required the least amount of prep because I didn't need to do tons of stuff. And I think she just kind of radiated gold as it was. She had beautiful blonde hair. She had like this bright golden dress. And I'm like, even with no Photoshop required, she looks like she glows a little bit.
That's a good point.
So I just liked her as like that focal point of, you have all this like stark green garden all around. No one needs to notice that none of those trees are apple trees. But yeah, just that moment. And then having her looking the other way as the eagle is off in the distance.
Yes.
So again, I wanted these to be a moment in a story. It's not her posing with the apples. I wanted it to be the story is happening and this is just a screenshot of it.
Mm-hmm. And of course, for those listening who might not be aware, in this particular story from the Norse pantheon, Thazi, a Jotun with a great ability to change shape into animals, very much like Loki does, he captures Idun and takes him away to... Oh no, he gets Loki to bring...
He gets Loki to draw her out, and then he's able to snatch her.
Yes, he does, because initially, Odin, Loki, and I think Thor, or maybe it was just Heimdall, are off on having a little camping trip, and for some reason their fire is just not getting warm, and their food just never gets cooked. And so it stays cold. And then Loki discovers there's an eagle sitting in the tree and laughing at them and saying, why can't you feed me your food? Oh, it's because it's cold. And Loki challenges him and they fly off and he gets bound to this eagle. And the eagle says, actually, I'm Tazi, I'm the Jotun, and I want your Idun with her golden apples. And if you don't bring me to her, I'll drop you from this great height and you will die, kind of thing. So Loki being Loki says, okay, then, yep, for my life, I will do what you say. He lures Idun out, as he doesn't need to kidnap her. But then there's a reverse kidnapping in that Loki gets challenged or threatened to bring her back because all the golds are getting old and aging.
Yeah.
It's like their Avon apples. It keeps them young very much. And I think he changes her into an acorn to sneak her out of Thassie's castle to bring her back to the gods.
Yeah. Yeah, there's lots of shape-shifting, and again, my Photoshop is not at that level, so I'm just like, I'll take the image pre-transformation. That would have been an easier photo, actually, just like, here's an acorn, sorted. But, yeah, so I liked
No one would get the rest of that story, though, because it's an acorn.
I like that photo having a little bit of just menace of like it's the eagle's circling and she doesn't notice.
Yes, I think it's really good, and I really appreciate now the juxtaposition between her genuine brightness, as you say, compared to the dark greens of the grass and the leaves and the bushes and the trees around her. And as you say, it was kind of like, whereas Balder was always described as the bright one, maybe Idun herself had a certain brightness to her because the apples were golden and they had that such a potent magical quality that they were so vital for the gods. Just goes to show, children, you need to eat your apples just like the gods do.
Stay young. Apple of day keeps evil giants away.
I like that. That needs to be in a t-shirt, although very few would
niche t-shirt.
Oh, so that comes to the last photo in your at least current yet to be maybe continued a further expanded
series of
photos of the gods, which is a photo of a large man who is Thor. He's bearded, got long hair, he's brunette, which I quite like because Thor's often either blonde or red.
Yeah, he's actually a bit gingery. Maybe it doesn't quite come across in the photo.
Ah!
He's a little bit more gingery. I tried to find, again, a little bit gingery.
A little bit gingery. Cool. That's fine. But anyway, but he's being wrestled by an old woman. She's got him in a headlock.
Yeah.
Wrapped her elbow right around his neck and squeezing hard, and he's got his mouth agape, gaping, gasping for air, probably begging for mercy, that kind of thing. Yeah. And again, you've juxtaposed it into I presume it's the interior of Wickhurst again?
Yeah, it's Wickhurst. Any chance I get, Wickhurst.
And this is all to do with the, again, often not known story about Thor and Loki, especially, is the Utgard-Loki mischief they get on, where Loki and Thor both very much meet their match in more way than one.
Yeah.
Because in the legends, for the listeners and viewers who don't know, they go on a travel, they come across what they think is a cave, but then the cave starts moving and they tumble out and they find actually it's not a cave, it was a glove that belonged to a huge giant, and he's the biggest giant Thor has ever seen. And he goes, oh, sorry, you were sleeping in my glove. And then he offers them, I think, food from his sack, but Thor can't untie the knot on the sack. So then they don't have much food. The giant goes to sleep and Thor hits him 3 times with his hammer, and the giant says, oh, was that a fly? Was that a raindrop on my head? Oh, was that a leaf? Because he's oblivious, the pain does not break through with Mjolnir. And the giant wakes up and he leads them to his master's kingdom, which is Utgard-Loki. And then Utgard-Loki challenges them to a set of what they think are challenges that can really succeed in, because it matches their talents. Loki has the most brilliant task of an eating race with someone called, I can't remember, I want to say Logi, but it's not that, it's a name to do with fire, because it turns out fire is quicker, because whilst Loki's, albeit quite quickly, polishing the food off a huge platter, the other person has eaten the food platter and possibly half the table as well, because fire eats everything. Thor is challenged to wrestle an old woman. And of course, Thor finds this incredibly funny, like, oh yes, it'll be easy. But no. She really throws him down. And it turns out this old woman is old age and like near death catching up, because that's someone we can't ever really defeat. Although a part of this one, and I guess this may be probably one for your next project, is of course Thor lifting up Utgard Loki's cat.
I did think about the cat moment. There was a few, because I had a lot of options for Thor, and again, I might take a new one and maybe swap it out of the series. I did think about, because isn't there one of him like lifting the cat as well?
Yes.
So I thought about
get, like a little paw, just to lift a little bit.
Yeah. So again, giant animals, not quite in my skill set yet. So I did consider like, how could I do it? Where it's like, I don't know, get like a fur coat or something and make it look like he's, I was never able to come up with a good way of doing that. So I thought about that one. I thought about him drinking the mead horn. That's actually the sea.
Yes.
Because I thought that could be a raucous one of just like have just a giant mead horn and just have like water sloshing all down his, or mead obviously sloshing all down his face. So yeah, Thor, I kind of went back and forth, and like this series was shot over kind of the course of a year, because it was fairly spaced out at which events that I could do and when people were matched up. So I think by the end of it, I might have been running out of steam just a little bit. Of like, I just need a Thor. I need one of these to work. So trying to find when people could be available, or and again, Thor is such like a specific look. Shane, who is my Thor there, just like he lives like in Wales. So I'm like, when are you going to be around? So this is actually the one that the only Wickhurst one that's photoshopped. So I took the picture of him and Carol elsewhere and then photoshopped it into Wickhurst, which I think I got away with, maybe slightly less so than the other one. But yeah, I think, and I also just wanted to show, again, the variation of Regia. I wanted like a younger generation, not the older generation. It's not all just warriors. I wanted some variety. So when it was Thor fighting the old woman, I'm just like, let's do that one.
Well, those six photos are absolutely brilliantly done, and I am very impressed with your ideas, your concept, your staging, your lighting, of course your editing of them, and do send my thanks to all of those brilliant models, those brilliant members of Regia and Glorum, because they're epic in their own right, but they're even more epic now that you've put them in these particular contexts. And of course, I personally would love to see you do more. I'd love to have a whole book, just like with all the photos.
There will be more added at some point. I know I was trying to figure out how to do tier. Tier was one I was still trying to do. But I'm like, okay, how can I do, because I wanted to do the moment where he gets his hand bitten off. But again, Fenrir is a little bit of a tricky one to cast. So I was trying to figure out if I could do shadows. I was trying to figure out, I'm like, okay, who has a big dog that could, like, how could I do this? And haven't quite, still working on it. There might be a tier one eventually. If I ever do a round two and try and think of a few other ones, I would love to have tier, because I think he was such a big god to the Vikings themselves. He was like just as important as any of the other ones, and he kind of gets, he's not in Marvel, so no one knows him. So I was trying to figure out how to do that, but that one was going to be a little bit more complicated, but maybe somebody down the road get a tier.
Yes. I was just thinking what other gods you could use besides Tyr, of course, infamous for his losing his hand with Fenrir. Himdall, immediately, I think, of course, blowing the Gjallarhorn at the end for Ragnarok.
Okay, yeah.
Although I do think it's either Tyr or Himdall, but I know when Thor goes fishing with that giant fellow, ironically enough, the one giant he doesn't actually kill outright immediately, he has to go to either Tyr or Himdall's parents' house to borrow a big beer cauldron in order to take it and then either bring it to Valhalla, but then they have to go fishing. I can't remember which way around it was. I think they had to go fishing first, and then they were able to get the cauldron. Oh, but yes, there's some very weird stuff going on with these Norse stories. So I can imagine how hard it is actually to try and make them more visual with when you haven't got CGI.
Just like, I would love to do like Thor fighting Jormungandr, but again. Just taking a picture of like a friend's pet corn snake is not going to a giant sea serpent make. So trying to, that's where illustration kind of is sometimes a medium that fits these myths better, but I wanted to kind of bring it back into the realm of photography to a little bit more kind of realism to these.
Okay, so besides maybe continuing the Norse gods a little bit further, are there any other super cool photography plans you've got?
This year is kind of, I'm trying to focus on more battlefield photography.
Okay.
Largely because, again, just trying to figure out how to make battlefield photos look different. It's very, if we do it at shows, it can be tricky because there's either audience around or there's ropes or there's safety stuff. So trying to figure out, again, just trying to figure out photos that haven't been taken before of this hobby. And I haven't, oftentimes when I'm trying to like, okay, I want to do battlefield photography, but people are too busy fighting. So there's a bit of a difference between like fighting for staging and the competitive fighting that we do. So it's hard to do both at the same time. So that will still be, you know, it's a constantly evolving project. And I think people are getting more involved with the photography stuff. They'll be like, oh, I want to do this, or I'm working on this. Can you take some pictures of this? So like around Wickhurst itself, we're building new structures. So that changes the setting of now we have these other buildings and these other setups that we can take pictures in. Wickhurst is a photographer's playground because you don't have to hide any of the background. If we're at events, normally there's something that's a little bit anachronistic in the background. And so you take pictures as these are show pictures, but you know, you're slightly just ignoring, you know, the family of five who are having a picnic while watching the show that they're there to see, which fair enough, but doesn't work for my photos. So I'm always, as much as I can, the photos that I post on my website, I'm trying to make it that there's no modern in them. But photos are different purposes. I always just like a big part of it, because I love photos of me doing the hobby. And I know when I joined, that was a big thing. Like, I'm loving this hobby. I want pictures of me doing this. So I like being the person to supply that for a lot of the group, where I'm just like, everyone's worked so hard on their kit. Everyone's working so hard on their crafts. Everyone wants a cool photo or video or something of them just looking like a god of war in the line. So being able to kind of, at the end of a show, be like, all right, and here's all the pictures, guys, is a kind of very special role for me that I've kind of carved out in this hobby. It's my hobby within a hobby.
I think that's truly wonderful that you've managed to find the perfect theatre almost for both those passions to come together and support the other really, really well. I mean, I could quite happily talk about my theories for ages, about my many theories and ideas, especially about them in fantasy fiction, but that's a whole other episode with a whole other lot of content and thoughts to go into it. So for those who are listening, and of course those on YouTube, you can of course see these beautiful photos and all the other ones, including the ones of the Anglo-Saxon saints that Jen has taken on her website, jenniferpeterspheto.com. That is jenniferpeterspheto.com. And click on the reenactment section, and that is where you'll find them. But there are other aspects to her many creative talents also visible on that website. I guess the final question is kind of like, besides obviously Hastings is some time away, well, say some time, it's in September, it's only a couple of months at least away. Are there any other big events that you're getting looking forward to over the summer with Reggae Anglorum?
Yes. So anyone who's interested, anything to come to, if you just go to regia.org, we have our entire summer diary on there. The shows that are coming up for us, we have a show in Wirral in June. We have every local group will have their local shows. We're doing Detling Military Odyssey. And then as well as that, we all there'll be another one at Wickers, but that's just members only, so that's just for us, where we turn that into basically just an immersive weekend where we just live at our Anglo-Saxon burr. And then various groups will have their own local shows or local trainings. We normally have one or two shows a month that people kind of get to. And then beyond that, lots of people like will meet up through the week or at trainings or whatever else. So it is a very close-knit society. So we see as much of each other as we can.
Cool. So if anyone's interested in wanting maybe even follow in Jen's footsteps and join reggae and or see them in their action, do go to reggae.org and find all the details. And I guess we're going to have to wrap up here because I know I've taken up a lot of your evening already. But it has been a truly wonderful and enthusiastic and passionate discussion. And I'm so glad I tracked you down on Facebook. I'm so glad.
I'm saying that like, who's taking this? I need to talk Facebook to them. Group.
Like, I run this little podcast, can I please talk to them about these photos? Because they were just awesome. And I'm really happy that you've joined me on the podcast and as a special bonus episode. And of course, I wish you luck with whatever you do next, whether it's with reenactments, your photography, of course, any other research, academic reading, et cetera, you might be doing, for example. I mean, your thesis sounds amazing. It's so fascinating when people dive into the historical aspects of fantasy, because that is a whole episode and debate in itself, how much medieval influenced fantasy, now how fantasy influenced medieval and vice versa.
Yeah.
But yes, I really appreciate your time. So thank you so much for coming on today. And yes, we will look forward to seeing what you get up to next with your many skills.
Wonderful. Thank you.